From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, our newest book song, where we create a unique, one-of-a-kind song just for your book, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo, and today's conversation is with a recent International Firebird Book Award winner, author Adrian Caldwell, whose memoir, Unbroken, Life Outside the Lines, is a stark and deeply personal account of surviving childhood trauma, abuse, foster care, homelessness, and the long road toward reclaiming a voice that was nearly silenced. Adrian writes with unflinching honesty about what it means to endure the unimaginable and still find the strength to stand in the truth of your own life. We have lots to talk about today. Welcome to the network, Adrian.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat. It is truly a privilege to be here with your audience and with you.
Oh, you are a kind one. I appreciate that. And congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Award.
Thank you very much. I am very honored. If you could see me, I'm blushing a little.
And we talked prior to coming on air how you did win for memoir, which I told you is a pretty heavily entered category. And the one that you said just tickled you was the most likely to make you cry from our quirky categories. And yeah, I guess that's a good thing and a bad thing, right?
I was very amused by it. My book, Unbroken, is a hard read. There are sections that really just hit you and you're like, oh man, but, ultimately it is about perseverance. It is about resilience and overcoming just horrific events that really should never happen to anybody. Mm-hmm. But my message is hope. So yeah, most likely to make you cry. Yes, there may be some crying involved, but it's ultimately about hope.
Absolutely. And I agree with that. And I know that you do many interviews that delve into, let's say, more of the specifics of some of your childhood traumatic events. Today, I'm thinking that since we are an author podcast, that maybe I can frame some of the questions that let you speak about the emotional journey of writing, as well as touching on some of the actual events themselves, because I know that's all intertwined. So if that's okay to you. Yeah. I want to start with just the courage to write without even knowing the backstory here. Just the little that you just shared there, your book, Unbroken, Life Outside the Lines. It doesn't read like a typical memoir. It feels more like a reckoning. So I'm wondering, when did you realize that telling the truth about your life was something you needed to do, even though I'm sure you knew that it was going to be extremely difficult to do so?
Honestly, Pat, if I had known how difficult it was going to be to write it, I would have given it a second or maybe even a third thought. Mm. I was honestly not prepared for how difficult it was going to be. But it started out as me needing a voice for my story. I was in Children's Protective Services until I was 18, from the age of 12 to 18. And the abuse that I endured, I'll put it this way, my schizophrenic, physically abusive mother, I've never had a nightmare about her. The woman that I lived with, the foster parent, to whom I refer to as the witch from hell, except with the B, TBFH in the book. I never give her a first name. Her name is TBFH. I've had nightmares about her up until as recently as 3 months ago. So that kind of gives a perspective. And so at 20 years old, I asked for my case file from CPS, and I received this giant box just full of every document that was ever written about me. And it took me 20 years to be able to sit down and to go through this massive pile of documents. And as I was doing so, I got angrier and angrier about what she did to me. She dehumanized the foster kids in a way that, well, I describe in the book. But quick example, we weren't allowed to sit on the furniture. We had to sit on the floor like animals. And the last foster girl to bathe or to shower, I should say, had to clean the tub with a bleach cleaner before anyone in her family would use it. So just horrific abuse. And I reached out to attorneys, I reached out to the state, I reached out to the county, asking first to make sure that she was no longer a foster parent, and second to see if she could be held accountable for any of it. As I mentioned, I still struggle with nightmares from living with her. And I kept getting the same response. There, it's too late. There's nothing you can do. And I feel horrible for waiting 20 years, to reach out and let them know the abuse that I endured while in her care. But it was the soonest I could do it. And just getting told over and over that there was nothing to be done, that's when I said, I can write, I can share my story. And foster care is one of my soapboxes that I get on, because what I went through, no child should endure. And anyone who says that emotional, psychological abuse isn't abuse, oh, I will happily argue that, because it was horrific. So having the courage to write, I am looking back, I am incredibly glad that I did it, and I really hope that my story inspires others. I want my goal is for somebody who's enduring a traumatic event or has endured in the past traumatic events, I want them to say, if she can go through all of that and come out the other side and just be happy and thriving and living a life I never could have dreamed of when I was 12 years old. If she can do that, so can I. And that's what I hope people take from it. Now, I do have a companion text. I didn't submit it for the contest, but it is my CPS case file, and it will be unbroken, the case file. And my hope is to have the firsthand trauma memoir, which helps students of psychology, counseling, social workers, et cetera, see the firsthand account of the trauma. But then I'm providing a clinical perspective so that they can have the two in the classroom.
I love that idea. I think I can't imagine how difficult that is for you to do, but at this point, I'm feeling from you that it's almost necessary, just to round out this book, just to substantiate that. I can't even imagine that. You're talking about the foster care experience. That was maybe what, 20 years ago for you?
25.
25. What are the realities of foster care today? Has anything gotten better, or has it gotten worse? Like, what are you seeing now? I can't imagine that somebody go, some woman goes through a vetting system and then ends out doing these horrible things. Tell us where we sit today.
So it's very discouraging. So in the state of Texas, and I believe all states, when you are a ward of the state until 18, you can go to college, any public state university, and that includes vocational schools. You can go and they waive the tuition and fees. And now they have programs that help with housing and your meal plan. And it's available to every foster child that graduates from being a ward of the state, and only 3% 3% of foster kids take advantage of that.
Ooh, wow.
Another just horrifying fact, prisoners, individuals in prison, 1 in 5, so 20%, are former foster kids.
Oh,
20%.
say that again.
1 in 5 prisoners, 20% of the US prison population is made up of former foster kids.
Okay.
And my last shocking, 7 out of 5 girls, 7 out of 5, 70% of girls that graduate from foster care will have had a child by the time they are 21. So not only are they not learning a vocation or a skill or going to college, they are getting pregnant and starting the cycle over
All
again.
over again.
So we have got to do a better job for our kids. If kids are the future, if they are our greatest asset, we have to do better by them. And it's not the social worker's fault. They have 25 to 30 kids at any given time. The turnover rate for social workers, caseworkers, is, I don't know the statistics, but it's ridiculously high. You're getting new caseworkers every 4 and 5 years. They just cannot, they're overwhelmed with the number of kids and what they are expected to do. And of course, the emotional cost,
Yeah, the
because
burnout.
exactly,
Yeah.
to go into foster care, a child has to have endured significant trauma. And right now, the system isn't designed to address that. So there is something called therapeutic foster care, which is what I went into. It's for kids with higher needs. But, and there is a huge but here, the foster parent that I lived with was not an employee of the state or of the county. She was an employee of a for-profit company. So not a nonprofit, a for-profit, a company out to make money off of kids in foster care. And the higher the emotional need of the child, the higher the pay rate. So it disincentivized foster parents from helping kids get better. Think about that. Your paycheck, the higher the needs, the higher your paycheck. And we're supposed to be helping these kids with therapy and psychiatric evaluations and really helping these kids to learn how to overcome the circumstances that they have survived. And we're disincentivizing the foster parents. We pay them less. And in my mind, it should be the exact opposite. If you're taking a kid and helping that kid get better, you should get paid more, not less.
Yeah.
And it's a touchy subject. Foster parents, most foster parents do it as a vocation. You know, there's the lovely image of, you know, dad's a lawyer, mom's an accountant, and they decide to take in 1 or 2 foster kids because they have just such warm hearts, and it's something that they want to do for society. That's not re the reality. Most foster parents do it as a vocation and get as many children as they have room for, as the state legally allows. And I don't think that's inherently a bad thing. I'm not criticizing that, but they are not properly equipped to deal with the kids that are coming from physical, sexual, abuse.
It sounds like in some cases it could be just a way for them to make a living where they might
It is.
otherwise not have had the talent or the intellect or the get up and go to create something and make it happen for themselves. So now they count on the system. Well, let's take in these kids and just behave poorly and collect a paycheck. That's just disgusting.
It is, but there is such a desperate need for foster parents.
Well,
We
but at what
have kids,
cost? What you
absolutely.
know?
That's a very legitimate point. The alternative when, or what these kids face when there aren't enough foster homes, and there aren't, they go into shelters,
Yeah.
girls and boys shelters. And I was homeless the summer after fourth grade. And I can tell you that being in a shelter, in fact, when I first went into foster care, I spent the night at a girls' shelter because they were trying to find a family to take my brother and me. And it's not good. They are not given the attention that they need. They're not given the therapy that they need. It's basically a roof over their head, food on the table, and that's about it.
But you know what? If their alternatives or some of their alternatives are what you had to face, it's like, oh, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, you want to get out of the shelter, but to go where? Live with, you know, someone like you had to deal with. So, wow. Basically, we're still at square one in this battle to improve this system.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for bringing
Absolutely.
that to light. I think that's not something people typically think about. Like you said, it's you, the lovely parents that have wonderful jobs and you know have a great life and they decided to do a good thing. Thank you. There's so much more to unpack and talk about there, but I want to get on to a other you talked about surviving trauma, but you also witnessed some devastating events as a child. I think the drowning of a young girl. I mean, how do you carry those memories, the guilt, the confusion that comes with them, and how eventually does that come to shape the way you see the world today?
Well, before I saw a girl drown, I was very nearly the victim. My little girlfriend, she was 5 years old, she was sexually assaulted. And the only reason I wasn't was because I was walking behind the man. And I stopped and I ran back to my family's apartment and I said, "Janie's in the woods with Mr. Montgomery. Janie's in the woods." And my uncle ran out, found her, and they didn't realize that I was still in the living room. He came in carrying her. She was just draped across his arms and her dress was covered in blood. And I witnessed that at 5 years old. I was
Oh.
very nearly the victim. In fact, survivor's guilt. At 5 years old, I felt survivor's guilt because it
It
didn't
could have
happen
been
to
you,
me.
yeah.
It, absolutely, absolutely. So between those two things, by the time I was 7 years old, I learned that little girls are not safe in this world. And the other thing that I learned was to listen to my inner voice, because that's what saved me. That's why I turned around when we were on that path in the woods. That inner voice that just started alarm bells saying, this is bad. Get out, run. And I listened. Unfortunately, Janie, she was holding Mr. Montgomery's hand. She didn't, I wasn't able to save her. And in my family, I come from a family where my grandfather was military, Navy, and my grandparents taught their four children that you don't talk about these things. You just put one foot in front of the other, you just get on about your business, and you don't discuss things. Very stoic. Very much just sweep it under the rug. We don't talk about these things. Just get on. And it's something that years of therapy, and I'm even doing TMS. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's transcranial magnetic stimulation, basically little points on your brain. So I'm still trying to grow and heal. And it's something that I don't think it's a destination. I don't think there's ever going to be a point where I say, "That's it, I'm all better.
It's a journey. It's your
Ta-da."
journey.
Exactly. So I am continuing on that journey. Talk therapy, I'm done with. But I am pursuing other avenues because I, as great as my life is now, and I am so blessed, Pat. My life, if you had shown the 15-year-old me the life that I have known now, my 15-year-old self would have called you a liar. There's no way I could have believed. I mean, my daughter is beautiful and she's in college. She wants to be a teacher. Her stepfather, my husband, is absolutely amazing. And I have this blessed life that I never could have imagined. I wouldn't let myself imagine a life this good. And my gratitude is just off the charts. And it's not perfect. So my daughter's father, we were married. He passed away when I was 35 and he was 38. I am medically disabled. I have rheumatoid arthritis. I live in pain every single day. So it's not like my life has been perfect. It's not like all these bad things happen. And to be honest, unbroken life outside the lines, I kind of leave it where I'm going to law school and everything's resolved and everything's all better. And, look at me, I'm going to law school and I leave it at that. There may be a book number two. I'm not sure that I'm up to writing it. It would be Unbroken, Cautiously Optimistic.
No, good
So.
title. Good title. It sounds like you're doing so many things to move forward and considering writing a second book. It makes me think of one of the things you said is that trauma often lives in the body, even when the mind forgets, or at least tries to forget. When you were writing these chapters in this first book, how did you take care of yourself while revisiting these memories that were still living in your nervous system?
Sure. That's a legitimate question. I had a very strong support network, and anyone who's been through trauma and is thinking about writing their story, that would be the first thing that I cannot stress enough. You have to have a strong support network. Whenever I would get triggered and overwhelmed, whenever I'd write a particularly difficult chapter like TBFH, the Witch from Hell, the foster care chapters, it was very daunting and very difficult because I am like expert level at repression and putting everything in a metaphorical box and putting it on a shelf and closing the door. And that's where all of my trauma lived until I started writing Unbroken. And it was with the support of my husband and his gracious understanding that this was something I needed to do. He very much wanted his happy, happy, rah, rah Adrian back. And he would come home, and I had just written about foster care from hell, and I wasn't in that space to be his Adrian, his rah-rah cheerleader Adrian. I was down, I was devastated, and I would listen to music, upbeat, happy music. My mother, brother, and I, we lived in government housing. It was an all black community. We were literally the only Caucasian family. So I have an affinity for rap and hip hop, which is quite funny. And so I would put on positive music, upbeat music. I would take a bath and kind of allow everything to just flow out, to let go of the hurt. And the anger and the pain. And my best friend Joshua Murray got many phone calls where I've actually known him since the eighth grade, which is remarkable that I've stayed in touch because I went to 13 schools by the time I graduated from high school. But he wouldn't let go of me. My junior year of high school, I received a congressional scholarship to do a one-year foreign exchange to Germany. And he would write me letters, and I would occasionally respond. And what's amazing, my website, unbrokencaldwell.com, not only have I posted my CPS case file, but he kept those letters from 30 years ago. And I have these letters posted, so you can see my mentality, where I was at in from my CPS case file. I wrote my caseworker, and when she didn't respond, I wrote to her boss. So I had to focus on recovery and healing, and it was very, very difficult to write Unbroken Life Outside the Lines. I'm not gonna lie. And I just, anyone thinking about their story, anyone who's experienced trauma, just make sure if you need a therapist, have a therapist. Make sure you've got the support of your partner, your friends. They are going to be invaluable to you during the process of revisiting your memories.
Absolutely. Thank you for that sage advice. I think also just knowing on the back end that once you get this book out, you have no idea of the impact it's going to make. And you'll never probably meet any of these people, perhaps, you know, and it just by the fact that they read your book, you have no idea how that could just change somebody's life. So as difficult as it was for you and traumatic, I'm sure, just to deal with the writing of it. Just the beauty on the other end that you're helping other people. And, you know, there's no greater gift than that.
I
There
agree. My
really isn't.
barometer for success, if I can truly, profoundly change one person's life,
Yes.
I will consider it a success. That's my barometer.
And this book comes out soon. What, the 17th?
That's
Yeah. So
correct. March
I can't
17th.
wait for that. All right, one other question I have as we close. The title Unbroken, after everything you've lived through and everything it took to write this book, what does that word unbroken mean to you now? Is it a different meaning now than it might have been earlier?
Actually, I started out with the title Broken.
Yes.
And the more I thought about it, the more I rejected it. And in the book, I actually have the definition for unbroken. So it's not only not damaged, not destroyed, but not tame, not fit for service or duty. And I like to think of a horse, a wild horse. In order to ride that horse, you have to break that horse's spirit. And my spirit is not broken. No matter what I went through, I didn't break. I made it. And there's the Japanese art where I think it's kitsugi, I could be
Oh,
mistaken,
yes, yeah.
where broken
Broken.
pottery, ceramics, they repair it with gold.
Gold, absolutely.
And the final product is enhanced, is more made more beautiful by having been broken. And I love that.
And that's you, my friend.
Thank you.
That is you. You are lovely. Wow, so meaningful to have this conversation with you. It's one thing to read your book, another to hear your words. It brings us to another level. So as we begin to wrap up, anything you wanted to highlight today that perhaps we missed? I know there's a lot, but just anything in particular, or did we cover most of what you wanted to talk about?
I think, Pat, we had a great conversation.
All right.
I'm very open to the audience and readers reaching out to me. I'm on Facebook, Insta, LinkedIn, and if anyone reaches out, I will respond. I'd be very interested. Like you said, I may never know. the impact my book makes. But I'd like to know. I'm
I
certainly
know.
curious.
I know you would like to know. I say this from time to time, but there is this anonymity factor when we create something, whether it's a book or a piece of art, or I used to do radio shows, and I had a show for 12 years. And when I decided to end the show, I can't tell you the number of people I heard from for the first time after 12 years that said, oh, I've listened to every episode. That always sticks with me. And it makes me think exactly of what your situation here. You put this book out and you're hoping you'll probably not know the full impact. But please believe me that there will be people that will just read a turn of a word or one sentence or just a feeling from you that their life might take on a different meaning. It might give them the strength and the hope. So thank you for being able to write this book. If you would share your website or any other places then where folks can find out more about you and get copies of this new book.
Certainly. So Unbroken Caldwell, that's my social handle, as well as my website. And I not only do I put my CPS case file and documents, I have photos. You can buy the book beginning March 17th on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the major book retailers. And anyone who feels up to it, reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll respond.
Yeah.
But yeah, Unbroken Caldwell.
All right. Well, we're talking with Adrienne Caldwell, author of the book Unbroken: Life Outside the Lines. Her website is unbrokencaldwell.com. Stories like Adrienne's are not easy to hear, but they remind us how powerful it can be when someone chooses truth over silence. So for those who are listening, if today's discussion brought up difficult feelings for you, please remember that you are not alone and support is available. And I know Adrienne would be happy to talk with you. UnbrokenCaldwell.com. Adrienne, I almost don't have words to part with other than just thank you for being you. Thank you for sharing you and for being a part of conversations that truly matter.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for giving me a platform for my voice. So thank you.